Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
When we think about fertilizer pricing, probably corn acres and corn production is the most sensitive to rising nitrogen fertilizer costs. And our farmers have given us very interesting data around what they intend to do this coming year.
Kevin McNew, chief economist with FBN.
What we have found is that over half of our farmers in the poll that we sent out in mid-January said that they were going to change their fertilizer plans for 22. That could mean one of two things. It could have meant they are going to lower their fertilizer usage, or they could be looking for alternative sources. Now, the other thing we know about our farmers, because they contribute data to us, is the fact that we know how efficient they are at converting nitrogen into corn.
This is Agriculture Today.
You know, I think all of us are expecting some field hearings this year from both the House and the Senate sides, but in terms of actual really brass tacks work on crafting the 2023 Farm Bill, I don't think that's going to start until 2023.
Steve Sinski is the CEO of the American Soybean Association, but when it comes to priorities, what's ahead for wheat growers? Chandler Gould is CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers.
Well, that's exactly what we were just discussing about an hour ago and all day yesterday here at Commodity Classic. Though, you know, normally we do come out of Commodity Classic with our priority set. That's going to be more of a June time frame, I think, for NOG, and I've heard my other colleagues up here say the same for their commodities, really because I want to see the House and Senate Ag Committee principals come out with where their concerns are and what they're interested in so I can see where we're going to work together and where I need to educate them more on. And so we're going to continue to work on them. But, you know, that maintaining that flexibility between ARC and PLC is going to be crucial. Any additional authorities that maybe add to Title II programs to help the Biden administration reach their climate initiative goals, we want to make sure has that flexibility in there for, you know, wheat's always got a unique problem or unique concern. So that's going to be key for us as well. But then also just continue to reach out to all those new members who have never voted on a farm bill. So we had a PAC update, which is another reason we come to Commodity Classic, this morning. And depending on what happens in the election, we are easily looking at 50% or more of the House Agriculture Committee never have voted on a farm bill. So just the amount of education when you've got to go and talk Title I, Title II, Title III, crop insurance, that's going to be, I think, the biggest component is making sure those members are educated and make informed decisions that will support U.S. wheat growers and all farmers.
That's from wheat growers, but what about the soybean industry?
We have begun that process as well. We've held 12 Farm Bill listening sessions already, title by title. So we've had 5 by title and then 7 by regions where we wanted to get input from growers. We also have conducted a Farm Bill survey to get that input as well. I think a lot of the feedback that we're hearing is strongly in support of voluntary incentive-based conservation programs. We are wanting to maintain those and make sure that there's adequate funding and technical assistance to help growers implement that conservation on the ground. We're hearing strong support for crop insurance. Over 90% of soybean acres are covered by crop insurance, and that remains the most fundamental element for soybean farmers of their risk management portfolio. And then on Title I for the Farm Safety Net, you know, what we have heard really are two things. One is that the soybean reference price, they believe, is too low. And you take a look at the trade war that we had with China, it still didn't trigger any kind of payments under the Title I safety net. And so that's something we would like to have taken a look at to see if that can be addressed. And then a base update, a voluntary base update. You know, we're close to 90 million acres of soybeans that are planted, but only a little over 60 million acres of those have base. And we've heard from growers in some regions of the country where you have young beginning farmers that are farming ground that maybe only has 10 or 15% base on it because it used to be pasture or alfalfa or ponds or, you know, tobacco farms, whatever it is. And so those are some of the priorities that we've heard thus far.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We know that there's been great consolidation in agriculture. And it certainly has impacted and affected the number of markets that farmers have and potentially the amount of money that they have to pay to put a crop in the ground.
That's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack addressing attendees recently at Commodity Classic in New Orleans.
That's why we looked at ways in which, with exports focusing on more markets, climate-smart agriculture commodities focused on new markets, we looked at how can we make better markets. And we determined that one way we could do this is to figure out ways in which we could help expand capacity, increase competition, encourage more opportunity. So we announced this effort earlier in the year of $1 billion to expand processing capacity for livestock. We tried to help existing small livestock processing facilities with their inspection fees and reducing the cost to keep them in business. We provided grants of existing facilities that want to sell beyond their own state into other states to expand their inspection system. We provided grants to over 167 facilities. We provided a loan guarantee program to deal with the middle of the supply chain for more warehousing and more cold storage for mobile slaughter units. We got over 700 inquiries in that program. We think it could lead to $1 billion of additional investment. And we announced additional grant and loan resources for the expansion of processing capacity, recognizing that we also have to train the workforce that will work in those facilities. We set aside resources for workforce development, partnerships with Extension, partnerships with community colleges, partnerships with technical colleges, in an effort to try to grow that workforce. And we also put money aside to provide technical assistance to assist folks in making sure that their business plan was well thought out, their application was complete. Our belief is that more capacity means more competition. More competition means farmers getting a fair shake in the marketplace.
Now, John Doggett is CEO of the National Corn Growers Association and admits we've seen supply disruptions, but it could be beneficial at the end of the day.
Innovation doesn't occur in one-year spurts. It occurs every single day that farmer steps out of the house and goes to the shop or goes to the field to figure out what they're going to do. Innovation is something that occurs every day. Are we going to be okay for this year? I think so. I mean, we've been assured by the seed companies. They have plenty of seed. I think we're going to have enough chemical. We're not going to have an excessive amount of chemical, but I think we're going to have enough. But, you know, we had a presentation this morning from Pivot Bio. Their product and similar products are going to reduce the amount of nitrogen that we need for that corn plant. And there's just a lot of that innovation going on. And, boy, I tell you what, these high fertilizer prices, our guys can't get excited enough about those kinds of innovation. And they will push that as far as they can, and they're going to be demanding it. I think they'll get it. The other thing is that as we use less nitrogen in the field, that means there's going to be less nitrogen to get off the field. Farmers don't want that nitrogen to be down the river or down in the Gulf. But, you know, precision agriculture and the ability to more efficiently use nitrogen is just a huge, huge thing for our industry. And I think, again, just as the cure for high corn prices is high corn prices, the cure for high fertilizer prices is going to be high fertilizer prices because our folks are innovating every day to figure out a way to use less.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You know, I think we could see some pretty serious consequences for cattle markets. Part of that is the fact that we, you know, as you noted, parts of the country have been in drought in 2021 and some parts even all the way back to 2020. So, you know, a lot of these areas, producers are really, you know, they just don't have any resources left at this point. And we know in the Northern Plains and some other areas that hay supplies were very limited and so on.
Dr. Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State Livestock Economist.
With the drought continuing in those regions and now expanding into some other areas, you know, we could see a lot of forced changes, drought forced liquidation happen here in the next 3 to 5 months if conditions don't improve. And that's on a big enough scale. I mean, we're talking over half of the U.S. beef cow herd potentially impacted by drought at this point. And so, you know, that would clearly have some market implications. if this thing persists and stays as widespread as it is right now.
And we could start seeing liquidation across the southern plains.
Obviously, we maintained our numbers better than the rest of the country in general last year, or at least better than the regions that had more drought last year. So you could see a lot of consequences. But those regions that had drought, many of them did do some herd liquidation last year. But again, with no change in conditions, even more restrictions on hay supplies and so on, I think we could see pretty widespread liquidation across regions that have already been in drought, as well as these sort of newer drought regions. All of it could get to be pretty serious. And that's really a consequence of the fact that we're in a drought in the wintertime and going into spring. That's the worst possible drought scenario. A springtime drought, you just don't get any forage production, potentially. And if that happens, then the consequences get very severe very quickly as we move, from April, May, June, in that early growth period. That's a really critical forage time. And if we lose that, then we're really going to be behind the eight ball probably for much of the year.
So what are the long-term implications?
From a cattle cycle perspective, again, cattle numbers peaked in 2019. We were liquidating, but at a very modest pace until last year. And the drought last year and the additional cow slaughter that we saw last year accelerated herd liquidation somewhat last year. So we ended up this year with the beef cow herd down 2.6%. And again, with what we're talking about here, we could see that number accelerate even more this year. That would push us lower. If you remember what happened in 2011, 2012, we took the cow herd much lower than we ever intended to because of drought. And that set up a scenario of unexpectedly high prices following that. I'm not saying that'll happen this time, but I think it's a scenario that we want to keep an eye on, because it wouldn't take a lot of drought in 2022 to push us significantly lower than we intended to be in terms of our overall cattle numbers.
But could expansion be on the horizon?
We've had higher prices coming into 2022. Of course, prices were higher on average in 2021. Our expectations are for higher prices. And so if that translates into higher profitability, which is a real question now with input costs moving into the frame a little bit more, but assuming that the higher prices at some point in time translate into an incentive where the industry would like to expand, and that will probably happen. It just may not. We don't know when. But if the drought conditions abate, could we do it in 2022? I think it's pretty limited. Given the number of replacement heifers we carried over, they were down 3.3% coming into 2022, beef replacement heifers. And as I run the numbers, I have a hard time doing more than holding the herd steady at best. Even if we have good forage conditions and no real incentive to liquidate, I don't think we can put together much, if any, growth this year. I think the best we could hope for would be to kind of hold the herd steady, or perhaps maintain a very modest level of additional liquidation in 2022.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Yes, there's enough corn and there's enough ethanol capacity. If we took one-third of the gasoline in this country that's sold as E10, one-third of it, and convert it to E15... we will more than equal all of the oil and energy that we currently import from Russia.
John Doggett is CEO, National Corn Growers Association.
We can do that, but we need to have the opportunity to do so. And a lot of planning decisions are being made right now, and we want to make sure that those signals are going to be consistent. We don't need a major adjustment in some of this stuff on the 15th of June. Might be a whole lot nicer to have it in the next couple of days. We have written, and some of us on this panel have written the president saying, expand biofuels. We have been pushing with the ethanol groups. Let's allow the consumer to decide whether they want to buy E15 or not by allowing E15 sales to be year round. We believe that the president has that authority to issue that waiver. And we think that right now it's a whole lot better to go ahead and be talking about getting your energy out of an ethanol plant in Iowa than going to Venezuela and asking a dictator to be kind enough to send us a little oil.
Steve Sinsky is the CEO of the American Soybean Association.
Traditionally, we have had biodiesel, and the biodiesel industry that has been a lot of the growth in using soybean oil, used fats and oils as a feedstock. But also increasingly what we've seen, and this is where we're seeing some of the investments from the major traditional petroleum companies that are using the different process to use, again, those same feedstocks, corn oil,
oil, soybean oil, animal fats, used grease, to produce what we call renewable diesel. And that's going through basically the same kind of process that they use in their petroleum refineries through a hydrocracking process, a hydrotreater, to produce renewable diesel that, you know, is exactly like regular diesel, but only thing is from a very renewable source.
He talks about the potential for more of these renewable diesel plants.
We're excited about it. We think it's good. You know, we've seen there's a lot of announcements that have been made about potential plants. You know, some of those announcements, Lynn, are out there, like 5 billion gallons worth of additional demand. Not all of those plants are likely to be built. Probably half or maybe even less are actually going to hit the ground. But yet, over time, we do see that as a major driver as a source of demand, and we think that's good for all commodities, just as, you know, frankly, the RFS and the growth in ethanol was a big boon for growers of wheat, for soybeans, for sorghum, all of that across the board.
But we have to grow the crop. Chandler Gould, CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers.
As we continue to make sure crop protection tools are available to all of our farmers, and you know, I know my growers, we talked about this yesterday, I'm scared to use the word sound science because that's been jeopardized by the other side now as well. So maybe real science, exact science, I'm not sure. But, I mean, we do need to make sure that we've got the appropriate data and information out there so that we don't end up in court and stay in court over and over and over again, so that instead of spending years in litigation and state court and federal court, that we can make sure that our growers have access to these tools and through the proper comparison through the Endangered Species Act so that these crop protection tools can get to the market is in the best direction of our growers as long as they're using data and not emotion to make those decisions.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I hope the people of this great country never take for granted what you all do for us every single day.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking recently to farmers at Commodity Classic.
I hope there's a genuine understanding of the incredible contribution that farmers, ranchers, and American agriculture make. I hope that people understand that you work in all kind of weather conditions, in all kind of disaster circumstances, to continue to put a crop in the ground and to raise livestock. I hope they understand and appreciate you're out there when the temperature's minus 20 and you're out there when the temperature's 120. I hope they understand that because of the incredible acceptance and embrace of innovation and stewardship and sustainability, that you've continued to see remarkable productivity increases over the course of the lifetime of the people living in this country. I hope they understand that as a result of that, we're able to export to countries all over the world, and in doing so, we send a message not just about American agriculture, about its safety and sustainability and stability and quality, but that we're sending a message about the American brand, of innovation, of advancement, of leadership. I hope they understand that when they go to the grocery store, even with higher prices today, that farmers only get about 14 to 15 cents of every dollar they're spending at the grocery store, and even with those higher prices, they're still better off than almost anybody in the world in terms of walking out of that grocery store with more in their pocket. We spend around 8, 9, 10% of our income for food in this country. Most developed countries, 20%. Developing countries, as high as 50%. I hope they understand that when they are able to do that, it means that they're able to buy more and spend more and do more in other aspects of the economy, which has allowed us this incredible diversity. I hope they understand and appreciate that agriculture and food represents roughly 20% of the entire U.S. economy and is responsible for tens of millions of jobs. I hope they understand and appreciate that as you're raising your kids and grandkids, you do so with a value that impresses upon them the importance of giving something back. You teach that every day, every growing season. You can't keep taking from the land. You've got to give something back to it, or otherwise it'll stop growing. You know that. And the same thing is true of a country. You can't keep taking. You got to give back. And you do. And the people who live in those small towns that surround your farms do as well. Because a disproportionate number of those who serve in our military come from your communities. I hope they understand and appreciate that because of that value system and because of your impact on the economy, we've been able to create this middle class. We've been able to send a message about the importance of a middle class in a free and democratic society. And I hope that they understand how incredibly hard you work every single day. I want you to know I understand. And I'm going to do what I can to create those more new and better markets. I'm going to do what I can to advocate on your behalf. I'm going to do what I can to make sure that every American not only understands, not only recognizes, but appreciates what you do.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Then you take a look at the world situation overall, and here Ukraine in the last marking year is projected by the USDA to produce 33 million metric tons of wheat. The whole world overall produces 778, so you might think, well, that's not much of a dent, but they're a major wheat exported country, either 20 or 24 million metric tons, and the world's total of exports is about 203 million metric tons in start marking year. So, you know, about 10%. 10, 11, 12% of the world's exports come out of Ukraine.
Dan O'Brien is a grain economist at Kansas State.
So, again, not just in the U.S., but around the world, you probably see pressure to plant more spring wheat first and then maybe winter wheat later on. Exports for some countries have really picked up, in particular, India and Argentina are being talked about. Australia hypothesized that they'll increase quite a bit. I'm thinking that the U.S. wheat exports in the next marketing year will also increase. And underlying all this, it just seems like that until we start to rebuild stocks again from this one-time hit, that we would maintain pretty high prices in an effort, on the one hand, to ration usage, and on the other, to attract more acres in the longer run.
Turning to feed grains.
It's interesting to see how the USDA has raised their projection for season average prices for this marketing year to 565, up about 20, 25 cents in Wednesday's WASDE report. The futures for this marketing year, as we've all the way through the end of August of this year, projecting about 589. So not that much difference. In fact, the USDA number is trending up to meet what the futures are saying, at least by my calculations. And then in that next marketing year, unlike wheat, where you've got a large differential between this marketing year and the next, not that much difference really between the old crop marketing year that we're now in and a futures-based projection for the next one at about $5.91. Still a tremendous price, right under $6, but still a little bit above what the USDA is projecting. Really, I think what the USDA came out with in their Outlook conference is going to have to be redone. And I think they realize it. I understand that they're redoing that right now, given what's happening in the world market and an effect of a number of things. I would say also that the Russia-Ukraine conflict is affecting ethanol. It's affecting the energy markets in the United States as the United States has made a decision not to buy Russian oil. Well, that affects things. And so far, USDA also had raised ethanol production estimates for this current year in their last WASDE report. They raised their export number also by 75 million bushels up to 2.5 billion. And their reasoning was a straight one-to-one change that Ukraine won't be in the market to sell those bushels. So the United States is going to step in and pick up, be one of the countries along with Argentina and Brazil and a few smaller ones that'll come in and pick that up. So Argentina not being there and the risk of them not even being able to plant a crop, or if so, not a lot, comes into play. Glenn today, right afterwards, is going to be talking about the livestock market, and not a lot of direct impacts, at least on other than that, coming out of what I'm talking about, other than feed users in the U.S. are going to have a lot of competition for grain, particularly if both ethanol and the export markets are running strong. So with the likelihood of strong usage, ethanol and exports in particular, perhaps feed usage, ending stocks probably be drawn down a little bit tighter. And we anticipate having continued strong prices for that next marketing year from beginning of September, probably. You'd ask the question, how long do they last? Well, they probably last until we're assured of a large crop out there sometime in 2023 coming in. And if quote, saving the day in terms of tight supply demand.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
For USDA's World Board, putting together its monthly WASDE report is not easy, especially given Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Now obviously, there's a whole lot of uncertainty there, but the way things are happening right now, grain trade out of the Black Sea region, so from both Russia and Ukraine, has effectively been stalled.
Mark Jekinowski chairs the World Board.
Ports are closed. It's hard for shippers to get insurance on shipments. So there's just, you know, many reasons why grain trade has stalled. So now we have to kind of, you know, make some assumptions and some forecasts in terms of, you know, how long we expect those exports to be stalled and what happens to the grain that doesn't get exported.
One result?
We cut our export forecasts from both Russia and Ukraine for corn and wheat in particular, and that would be reflected in higher global ending stocks estimates for those commodities.
This is Stephanie Ho in Washington, D.C.